Word of mouth.
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 This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. Coming up today, first, you have to admit you have a problem. A new book digs into the slimy story of America's habit and denial of creating tons of trash. And a startup takes Instagram snapshots off the screen and puts them into the hands of retro photo enthusiasts. But first, ever get the feeling you're being watched? You may have to get used to it. While the U.S. government has relied increasingly on unmanned drones in war zones in recent years, the flying robots will soon be soaring in American skies. Last week, the Electronic Freedom Foundation disclosed a list of agencies within the U.S. which have been granted permission to fly drones over American soil. Locations include universities, federal agencies, and local police departments. Privacy advocates worry that innocent and unsuspecting citizens could also wind up in the lens of intelligence-gathering drones. Here to discuss the use of domestic drones and privacy is Ryan Kalo of Stanford Law School and Director of Privacy and Robotics at the Center for Internet and Society. He's recently been part of discussions on the domestic drone quandary in The Atlantic and also in The New York Times. Ryan, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thanks for having me.
Hello, are you with us?
I'm here, yeah. Thanks for having me.
Great. Glad you're there. A small number of drones are currently being flown in the U.S. Who is flying them, and what are they being used for?
Well, today, largely, the group that is using drones is domestic law enforcement. And what they're doing is they're kind of testing it out for a variety of law enforcement scenarios. The thing I've seen that's been most common, really, has been assessing a situation tactically. So maybe a SWAT team is a little nervous about what's around the corner, what's over the wall, until they'll send a drone up to get a little more situation awareness. But as you mentioned, other groups are using them as well. Universities are testing drone technology. It's being used to some extent in agriculture. But as you mentioned, I think you're going to see more and more of it.
Are there restrictions currently in place to determine who can fly drones and who cannot?
Well, today there's essentially a ban on the domestic use of drones for safety reasons, but you can apply for an exception through a relatively rigorous process to the Federal Aviation Administration. And as you noted, the Electronic Frontier Foundation filed a request to just find out who had gone through that process and therefore who had a drone or at least had requested the permission to use a drone, and generated some 60-odd different groups.
Any surprises on that list, Ryan?
I wasn't terribly surprised by the list. I mean, one of the things to think about is that this technology is incredibly useful to lots and lots of different sectors, but we actually don't even know how useful it will be. In other words, there could be many sectors, industry, government uses that we haven't even anticipated. And only when we relax the requirements of the FAA will we really get a true sense of how versatile and this technology might be. I was a little bit surprised. I wasn't surprised by all the law enforcement use, but I did note there were some surprises like the university testing and the use for agriculture and science. It only begins to hint, though, at the full range of uses, potential uses of drones domestically.
Yeah, I imagine if these regulations become more lax, CNN, Fox, TMZ might be employing, robotic flyovers for their reporting.
I think they'd have every incentive to do so. And by the way, I mean, there really is a plan in place in the next few years to relax these requirements, including for private commercial uses. Because today, only public agencies really can get their hands on things on drones, or perhaps you can get it if you make drones or if you program drones like a university or someone who manufactures drones. They can get a waiver, of course, in order to test the technology. But by and large, you have to be a public agency. So two things are happening at the Federal Aviation Administration right now. One is that really in the very near term, I mean, that is to say in the next few months, the FAA is going to be reexamining and streamlining the process by which a law enforcement or other public agency will be able to get drones. But in a few years, they contemplate opening up the skies to commercial uses as well. And that's when we might see CNN and Fox and others getting into the drone game.
How much does it cost to set up a drone system?
It really ranges. If you want to do something that is sort of, in any way professional, I think you're looking at upwards of $1,000, even for the most you know, the sort of smallest thing you might imagine. A lot of the drones that law enforcement are using are in the neighborhood of $10,000, $20,000. And that may seem like a lot of money, but if you compare it to, say, a helicopter,
right.
You know, there are many, many smaller law enforcement agencies, you know, smaller police squads that just can't afford a helicopter, but they sure can afford to own and operate a drone.
We're discussing the use of drones on or above, let's say, American soil and their potential effect on our already eroding state of privacy. Ryan Kalo's with us. He's a privacy and robotics researcher at Stanford Law. So obviously you've looked at robotics quite a bit. When we're talking about drones, I think most people picture the military versions deployed right now in the Middle East that we've heard so much about. Are there non-combat capabilities that make drones particularly threatening or even useful in someone's privacy here?
Both, right? I mean, they're both. And so, you know, it's interesting that when we think about drones, as you say, I completely agree. We tend to think of these, you know, Predator B drones that are being used in combat situations. But even in a military context where a drone use is absolutely widespread, you know, I would say that the overwhelming majority of uses are actually surveillance, situational awareness. I mean, we tend to think of them as taking out targets. Because, you know, the so-called targeted killing, because that, of course, makes the headlines and is strikes us as has a lot of salience to us. But a lot of what they're used is for surveillance. Same thing domestically. I mean, you know, there will be very few use cases, especially initially, that don't involve some degree of you know, taking photos and videos and the like. And so, again, the fact that drones cost less, and that drives down the cost of surveillance. And it's sort of standard economics that will then drive up the amount of surveillance. So one basic worry is that we'll be just a more surveilled society because it will be easier to keep watch over us. And honestly, privacy law as it stands today doesn't really have as many hurdles and roadblocks as you might expect to you know, flying robots with cameras.
Well, as we know, with the drones exercises in Afghanistan, Pakistan, Iraq, mistakes have been made. And the fact that, you know, they may not be just surveying people who need surveillance, but innocent people is the big concern. Now, you just mentioned, you know, maybe our privacy laws haven't really kept up with the technology. What does this mean? Are there any legal protections now in place for individuals being observed by drones?
Well, so I mean, just to back up just one moment and say, it is a general trend that surveillance technology is growing at a much faster rate than privacy law is expanding, right? And so there's been this disconnect, this gap between the coverage of our privacy laws and how fast the surveillance technology. And drones is no exception. Now, we might argue after this a big case in the Supreme Court, United States v. Jones, which actually didn't involve drones but involved a GPS device, where the officers were following a car around
for a long period of time.
Yep. Right.
It went to the Supreme Court.
It went all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said, look, you can't follow somebody around all the time with a GPS device. Now, of course, the majority opinion of that turned on the fact that the officers had attached a physical device to the car. And a drone differs from a GPS device in that it can follow you around without having to attach anything, of course, to your vehicle. That said, many justices, and in fact, you know, 5 out of 9, were very concerned about continuous surveillance electronically as well as by, you know, simply by fixing a GPS. And so there could be some limits about following around one particular target for a long time without a warrant. That's a possible way to interpret what's going on in Jones. But generalized surveillance, like just patrolling a neighborhood to keep an eye on people, that's going to be treated, I think, as no different than, say, a fixed camera on a particular corner. And that's the kind of thing that I think I worry a little bit more about. Is, are we the kind of society that wants, you know, flying drones basically keeping watch over the populace? And does that raise special concerns that are not presented by contemporary measures?
Pretty slippery slope, Ryan. I really want to thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Ryan Kalo, Director of Privacy and Robotics at Stanford Center for Internet and Society. You can find links to his article about the use of domestic drones and the list of agencies flying drones right now. That's at wordofmouthradio.org. We'd love to hear what you think. How do you feel about the use of these unmanned aerial vehicles flowing around you at home? Let us know on our Facebook page or by sending us a tweet. Now coming up, how one group of math fans in San Francisco celebrated the little heralded holiday known as Pi Day. That's when Word of Mouth continues after a brief calculation.